Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Benjamin Richardson.
Hello.
And Rachel Shackleton.
Good day.
Now, we all adore Nintendo. I thought we'd gather us together today to basically just have a big old love-in on the state of Nintendo for where they are right now. I've written down some different things that we can break down. I have an overall framework. I'm going to open this up by saying that I think Nintendo are in the best position they've been in since the SNES.
Oh, certainly.
So would you guys both agree with that?
Yeah, I broadly agree with that. I actually think it's worth noting that they did lose a lot of their market share with the SNES because Sega beat them to the punch, as it were. But in terms of their position in the industry as a gaming company for gamers, I absolutely agree. Because obviously the Wii eclipsed everything for a brief period, but it did feel like people who, like long-term fans of Nintendo, had lost what they loved.
Yeah.
That
whole thing of like Nintendo sort of like going down the route with the Wii, and it became like, obviously it was one of their most successful things ever. But for me, like watching that unfold across the 2000s, it was like they started targeting a completely different, way bigger demographic, which, and obviously looking at general forum chatter at the time, was like, oh, they've abandoned the people that got them there in the first place.
I made this pun to you before the pod.
Do it again,
so,
good
yeah,
sir.
I'm going to do it again. It was good. Said the Wii was a console that you couldn't shake a stick at, even though you literally were. However, but in terms of like classic first party Nintendo games, Mario's and Zelda's, even things like Star Fox, it didn't really serve us in the right way. We had Skyward Sword, which was extremely gimmicky, and although I actually maintain it's an excellent game, it would be a million times better without the whole waggling.
Yeah,
aspect.
It was ruined by the console that it released for a year.
Other than the two Mario Galaxies, which had very limited motion controls, there wasn't a lot of
like buy the system for this gaming games. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's its general reception, is like everyone thinks of it as like the Wii Sports console, which I think for me it totally is. My parents got into gaming because of that.
Which is a great thing.
Yeah.
And there was room for that, but I just wish Nintendo hadn't made it the entire focus of their first.
I think that was the thing. Rachel, what do you think about them in general?
I'm really glad that, I mean, just looking at the state of things now, so they are obviously, with the Switch, it is now once again a console for the people, for the multitude.
The masses.
Sorry, Rich. No, that's okay. I just want to mention, what really emphasizes that point is Mario Odyssey was effectively the Super Mario 64 sequel we've been waiting since 1996.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like saying, this is the type of games we're doing for you again.
Yeah. It was absolutely for people like that who, you know, wanted, like you say, Mario Odyssey was fantastic. Breath of the Wild was revolutionary. Mm-hmm. But they tried the whole 1-2 Switch thing, which was their Wii Play. Was Wii Play a game? Is that the...
There was like Carnival Games and the Wii Fit thing and everything.
They tried that. I mean, it works as a party game machine. You can get like Jackbox and stuff on it, so it does work as like, you know, just like a party machine and one for, you know, long term.
Yeah, it's not like Nintendo just fell in line with Sony and Microsoft of just is a huge powerful console.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because they actually tried that with the N64, and although I think the N64 is the best console they've ever released, it actually wasn't necessarily in line with their previous philosophy of constant innovation.
Actually, let's quickly go around. If you would throw up the N64 as the best one they've done so far.
I would, and that's entirely on the strength of its library.
Okay.
It's the first party Nintendo stuff, Ocarina of Time, Mario 64, Star Fox 64, and then the Rare F-Zero stuff as well.
Lilith Wars.
I was going to say, Rachel, what would yours be in the best console Nintendo have done so far? Just a quick little thing.
I am very, very, like, I'm BD in the Switch right now. Like, I love my Switch so much. But my N64 was my childhood. It was my everything. So it would be a close between the two.
Mm. I mean, I did a whole thing. I haven't done a video version of it, but there's an article on the site about the best consoles that are available right now. And for me, I do think the Switch is the best thing they've done. I've got a whole chunk that I want to dissect the Switch later on. But it's just, for me, like, you look at the way that thing came together. together. Like you take the analog stick from the N64. I love when they put the video out going like, well, we had a carry handle on the GameCube, also, so we brought that back as well.
Yeah, I was going to say the GameCube was the true first portable console.
Portable home console.
Yeah, the Switch is also like, it's the ultimate example of Nintendo's long-time philosophy. Do you know Gunpei Yokoi, the famous engineering work there?
An idea
called lateral thinking with withered technology, mm-hmm. which was using technology and components that had became cheap and using them to make like new hardware, new applications, mm-hmm. which would be cheap for the consumer as well. And the Switch is definitely that. It's not by any means the most powerful console, but it takes, like you say, the aspects of the portability of the DS, it has the motion controls of the Wii in a small capacity.
Just enough.
The motion controls are really good.
They actually work extremely well. Yeah.
Processor and hardware capacities of GameCube.
I think it's weird because you think about that and it's like, it is like this like kind of underpowered, quote unquote. It is underpowered compared to the PS4 and Xbox One. But I think that's kind of what goes into making it lovable, because it's kind of, everyone kind of sometimes refers to it as like, you know, the little machine that could kind of thing. And it's like when you see Doom on it, or Wolfenstein.
It's so much more charming. And they've actually managed to market that whilst also making a profit on consoles, which is no company does ever manage to do that with a Switch.
Yeah.
Because you think like that's the thing that, because everyone talks about the Nintendo charm, or like the reason we love Nintendo, they've kind of had this new console now that embodies all that charm, like that sort of these little fervent ideas towards like game design that are now in the console, and it has a personality all its own kind of thing.
Totally.
One of the things I was going to ask was just like, when did you guys first come into Nintendo? When were you first a fan? What's your earliest Nintendo memory?
Birth. I was born in a red cap. No, very young, very young. First game I ever played was Donkey Kong 64. Donkey Kong Country.
Nice.
Sorry, we were talking about 64 earlier. Wanted my own SNES, got an N64, got my own SNES eventually, and that was it. Mm-hmm. It's history.
I think they are like an institution. Is that the same thing for you?
Forgot the Game Boy, sorry.
That's where I'm coming in. But yeah.
I grew up with a Commodore 64, mm-hmm. you can see the t-shirt there, mm-hmm. and the Amiga, and I actually was a huge Sega fan. Mm-hmm. I had a Master System, I was a huge Sonic fan, but back then, gaming was such a niche endeavor that people didn't pick sides. Mm. Well, at least I didn't get any sense of it, because I didn't have any other friends who played games mm-hmm. to compete with. You know, it was like, oh, Nintendo's, but no one said that.
And if you did, they would just come over to your house and play with the two controllers.
Precisely, like... yep. And I really wanted to play Nintendo games as well, but you know, your parents can only afford so much. Mm-hmm. Our first Nintendo console I got was a Game Boy.
Right. The original giant brick Game Boy.
What kind of Game Boy? Because...
It was, as Scott mentioned, a huge dominatrix.
See, you guys are a little bit older than me, so I think I was like just behind. I had a yellow Game Boy Pocket.
Right.
That was mine.
I was going to say, because for me, it's like I did have the original Game Boy that was handed down to me from like one of my parents' friends or something. And the first one that I actually owned was the Game Boy Color. So like that was like Pokemon Yellow.
Oh, you had a color?
Yeah, well, the original one that I held on to, but the first one that was bought, like proper bought for me, was that Christmas was the Game Boy Color.
Upper middle class.
And then I know, but then it was like, obviously Pokemon got made into color, and you kind of have that lush transition period kind of over. But yeah, I mean, like I remember going over to like a friend's house and playing like Pokemon Stadium, and like seeing a tiny chunk of Ocarina.
Yes.
And it's like, I think
I remember as well, the magic was there when I went in school one day. It was I don't even have Toy Day on the last day.
Yeah,
and someone had very kindly brought in the SNES and a copy of Mario World, and I just monopolized that corner of the room for the entire day.
It's kicking everybody out of the way so you can have a few more goes.
I just thought this is the best thing ever. And then Donkey Kong Country as well, he brought in.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean, like, those older consoles? Like, there's a thing that I sort of sometimes go back to in terms of the way that the gaming industry's gone. Because when you first played something like Ocarina, and you sort of, like, I mean, everyone talks about when you, I keep saying everyone talks about, but Nintendo's so widespread. The first time that you went out into the Hyrule field and you just saw it, like, sprawling out ahead of you, when you're a kid, that's like, oh my God, there's this whole digital world that's in front of you. And I think that they managed to redo that with Breath of the Wild. But, like, how much did you find yourself getting lost in those experiences? Was it the sense of control and mechanics, or just that idea of, like, other worlds in front of you kind of thing?
I wrote an editorial about Ocarina of Time when we were celebrating 20 years since its release last year. And I think what I mentioned is that before its release, the expectations were enormous. We'd been waiting for this game to come out for maybe 5 years. Mm-hmm. Everyone was expecting it to be the best thing ever. And it actually was. Like, it actually was. You knew the second you put it on,
it's a beautiful
magic
game.
Nothing's ever been like this. It was just a title screen for me. It made me like actually well up in tears.
I never really thought about that because we obviously look back, well, I would and others, I'm sure, would look back and say, right, yeah, this was just one of classically the best games ever made. Mm-hmm. But I never really think about what was this like when people knew that it was coming, they'd maybe seen the trailer, that god-awful trailer, and and they were expecting it and didn't know what to expect. That's like a really cool thing to think about.
Yeah, plus like you were coming from Link to the Past, like you had, yeah, you know, there were tropes in place kind of thing.
The anticipation was ludicrous, I remember, And it was still at a period when 3D games weren't entirely sure-footed. Nintendo had set a template with Mario 64 of how to do a 3D game, and it was so much more than that, to be honest. It was a very excellent game at the same time. One of the best ever.
Yes.
But Ocarina of Time then pretty much written every rule that was to follow. And that's still in use today, like just how you do combat in 3D.
I was just going
to
say Z-targeting,
How you pace a 3D game, how you lay out. And it sort of feels, you go back to now and it seems maybe trite and by the numbers, but that's because it established all the tropes.
They gave us those numbers to then go from,
You know, it was just a transformative experience to play a game with that structure at the time. And you wondered, how can anything be better than this?
I think because the next thing I've got down is, which is, we might still call the podcast this, but I was going to, you know, the whole idea when you're growing up, there's that general sort of phrase that gets associated with Nintendo, where it's, oh, Nintendo's for kids. And it's like, I kind of want to pick that apart. Like, where do we think that comes from? Is it the aesthetics or?
Maybe what? Because when they were in their, like, sort of height, it, like, we were kids, so that's like today's sort of gamers that are the ones that are likely to say that kind of rubbish on the internet and stuff were kids when Nintendo was sort of like, you know, coming into its own, so maybe that's where it comes from.
I think that's precisely it. When Nintendo were dominant in the late 80s, the market was aimed squarely at kids, and as a consequence the games had to be vetted in a certain way. They had to like sense of them. But what they failed to understand for a little while is that that same market was growing up. So when you got a game like Mortal Kombat came out, everyone wanted to play the violent version. They didn't want to play the SNES version with the blood replaced with grease. But they always really stuck by making accessible games because it was such a big part of their culture, going back to when they were at the top of the game, as Reg says. And I don't even think it applies these days. If the games are accessible, they're not.
Like, well, I think the Switch has helped smooth that over,
Children. I think the people who say Nintendo are for kids are immature people themselves.
Well, I mean, ignorant a little bit.
One of the great things about actually being an adult is that you get to make your own decisions.
I know. If you want to enjoy Breath of the Wild, then you enjoy that.
Yeah, like. I think it is worth addressing the fact that if you look at the 90s advertising, like Sega's way to sort of crowbar their way into the industry.
That was exactly the philosophy of Sega.
To target a
set of maturing audience, like mature in terms of age and not in terms of mentality.
But I mean, their whole thing with like Sonic, it was like, you know, like, you know, the whole idea with Sonic was that he was the future. He was this like, you know, cutting edge, he's a teenage kind of guy, and he's, you know, he's, we're with you as you get older kind of thing. And that was, for me, that's what set in motion the idea that Nintendo's for kids. I think that mostly stuck with them because they have this sort of dogged reliance on, you know, certain tropes for their games. Like most Metroids follow a very similar structure, like most Zeldas used to until Breath of the Wild.
And it's like, you a question about Metroid. Is Metroid a kid's game? Not specifically an adult's game.
I mean, the distinction I was going to make before we keep going is like, you think of like animation studios, you think of Pixar. Like, no one would specifically say that Pixar is just for kids. And it has that universal appeal. And I think that Nintendo have maybe struggled with that idea of Disney animation versus Pixar animation.
It's because the people watching Pixar movies aren't the sort of people who make these arguments on the internet, online, you know, sort of. Basically, teenage edgelords.
I mean, I don't want to take
it. It's ignorance. You have to take it on a game by game basis, just like you would take Pixar films on a film by film basis. The likes of something like Up that has extremely, you know, that'll appeal to kids because it's got humor in it. It'll appeal to adults because it's got adult themes in it. And then you take something by the same studio, such as The Good Dinosaur, which I believe was also Pixar, which was terrible. That was absolutely only a kid's film. So like with games, you have to take games on a game per game basis. You can look at something like, for example, Yoshi's Crafted World, which I'm playing at the minute, and it is very much a kid's game. It's very hand-holdy, but I'm really enjoying it because sometimes you just want that. and then I keep bringing it up, but then you could also look at Breath of the Wild, and it's a completely different story.
You could look at Mario Odyssey even, like, my nephew adored that game. He was playing it when he was 6 years
old.
It's
hard.
But it's to actually master it. It's extremely mechanically difficult. Yeah. Very fluid, and there's so much depth to it.
That's but secret, the, like, but, double, triple jump thing you can do.
But the doors are open to everybody. That's a great thing. It's like, imagine that game being in a I don't know, GTA setting, mm-hmm. all you achieve there is that you cut out a huge aspect of the audience mm-hmm. who can't play it.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you talk about like maturity in the industry, like the things that Nintendo pioneered, like how to do a 3D space, how to even conceptualize, that's the thing that gets overlooked so much, is that when the industry made the shift from 2D to 3D, coders had to rethink how you even approach game design. And there's a great clip back from when Hideo Kojima was doing Metal Gear Solid and then the shift to Metal Gear 2, where he was building Lego models to show, like, okay, the camera would go down and through this corridor and then somewhere else. So you could actually conceptualize how it was going to be done. And I think Nintendo, we talk about maturity in the industry, the things that Nintendo put forward were incredibly forward-thinking and mature in terms of how to elevate the media.
I think Nintendo... sorry.
I was going to say...
Benji loves some Nintendo.
It's one subject I feel passionate and happy about.
Good.
Nintendo, more than any other company, have matured the industry in more ways than anyone. Maybe Sega, to an extent, it's often overlooked how innovative Sega were mm-hmm. in terms of hardware, but Nintendo have absolutely have set the standards for mm-hmm. the rest of the industry to follow.
Yeah, is that the thing you were going
to
say, Rich?
I just want to say a game doesn't have to have tits and blood in it to be mature.
Okay, well, this is another thing. Like, people dramatically conflate what the word maturity means.
Yep.
Like, blood, violence, swearing, nudity, those aren't mature things. Those things that
they can be
interesting,
but it's technically
it is mature themes. That's what you call it,
in like a censorship age gating kind of sense.
It doesn't make a mature game.
Uh-huh. But I think that's another thing, is like, as the industry kind of shifted across like the early 2000s, you got more mature video games, at least in terms of the way that they were rendered. Whereas like Nintendo were always like, well, we have our cast of characters. I mean, it took them so long to create new IP. I mean, Splatoon was like one of the first new IP in so long.
Yeah, they're bad for that.
Yeah, but then when they do get there, it's like lush. Like Splatoon is instantly feels like it could be around in the 90s.
But there's a reason why I keep going back to these characters, and it's because they have universal appeal and they're extremely popular. They're great characters.
That's what I was going to say, is like that idea of sticking to the tropes that go alongside these games, like Zelda, Mario, Metroid, Yoshi, Star Fox, whatever. We nearly always know what these games are when we're going to be going into them. Where do you draw the line between something that's traditional and respectable because it's traditional and it sticks into a certain mold, versus they're repeating what they've done before and you're getting a new rendered version of something you've already had?
Well, I could give an example without talking about Breath of the Wild again, and that would be with Pokemon. There were a lot of people who were like really hyped for Pokemon Let's Go because it was the same but different, and then there were people who were like, oh no, what is this, we don't battle Pokemon, I don't want this, it's different.
If they did like a live action fighting Pokemon thing, not Pokken Tournament, but Pokemon style game with the new Final
Pokemon
Fantasy
Stadium
remake combat, kind of like, but if you were literally controlling them like Pokken Tournament but you're in a standard Pokemon game,
oh I see, so
that would break everything
open
again.
Give Pokemon the Final Fantasy 7 remake treatment. Oh my goodness,
there you go. Maybe that would be a thing.
But you would get people who would be like, oh, what's this?
Yeah,
because like Benji's saying, you will have the people who like a lot of Nintendo games are like coming home for some people, and they expect it to be a certain way, just a little shinier each time.
The odd thing is, though, I think Pokemon is probably the really bad offender when it comes to repeating the same thing.
Right.
True.
In as far as
I would
the main
say Smash Brothers
series.
Is, but yeah.
Yeah, but again, how do you figure out?
Well, anyone who's listening to us in Newcastle in the northeast of England can go to a show called Game 2.0 at the Centre for Life right now, where there's like 40 years worth of consoles, not being sponsored by them, but it's such a good show.
Do you want to go sometime?
It's really good. We should all go again. But they have a Smash booth set up with GameCube controllers, and playing that original version of it, N64 one, you realize how little and how much has changed.
The fact that Nintendo released a GameCube controller for the Switch to play Smash sort of typifies the extent to which people don't want Smash to evolve. They want it to be the same but more. But you look at the other mainline series, Zelda is a fantastic example. Mm-hmm. Now, the criticism of Zelda is that it started to become really rote by Skyward Sword.
Very formulaic.
It needed shaking up. But I actually disagree.
Right.
Because
they're all good, really.
Yeah, right.
It's good formula.
The second game in the series completely changed the genre. It went to a side-scrolling.
In a bad way.
In a really bad way.
In a bad way, but it did do it.
Okay, yeah.
And then from Link to Past, you went to a handheld game, which is a completely different thing altogether.
I'm going to disagree with you on all this. But
if anyone in 3D, then Majora's Mask completely changes the formula with the time mechanic.
Yeah.
Which they have not brought back, but they don't need to because it's brilliant.
Skyward Sword had motion controls.
But I mean, this is maybe a different podcast, but if we're talking structurally, I think they nearly all conform to the same formula of get item.
I mean, structurally they do, but in terms of
until
mechanics.
Yeah, well, until Link Between Worlds, when they start giving you everything, and then Breath of the Wild was like, here, here's the Sheikah Slate, you can just figure everything out from here on in. Those are the mechanical evolutions.
I'd also say Mario is not wrought in any way whatsoever.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I mean, 3D Land was a bit these days on the last 3D one. Land,
but again,
it's solid, but
Mario
more of the
64,
same.
Completely different to Mario 3 for obvious reasons. But then after that, it was followed up with Mario Sunshine, which strapped floods to your back and changed the mechanics. Then Mario Galaxy changed the mechanics again.
And that is why they've been able to keep using these characters over 30 years.
Mm-hmm. What for Nintendo, absolutely do not release annualized versions of their games where it's literally
yeah,
the same
with
new settings.
I think to bring it all back around, I think that like I said, we have that split of like that split between like the tradition and what you expect, and you love it because of that. And I still do. Like I'm not being negative because of this.
No.
But I think sometimes when you look at the changes that they do make in Link Between Worlds and Breath of the Wild, I thought they were so welcome because they were still within the sort of the framework that those franchises have.
A lot of his criticism wouldn't exist if maybe once in a while they made a Mario game, then took Mario out of it.
Mm.
But like, I don't know, a little
Gooey
Spanish postman or something. Like in his
maybe.
Place.
Does that, again, that would be like a whole new IP that they could do with doing.
Yeah, but you can understand entirely why they rely on these trusted and popular franchises.
I guess to posit something else on the mature side as well, do you think it would be just weird and just it wouldn't fit if they released something like A Last of Us, like A Witcher 3? I feel like that was a first party game. Do you see them ever moving into something like that?
I think that could be potentially incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you think, I guess it's just game mechanic wise, it would have to kind of have that sort of faux arcadey approach that a lot of their first party stuff does, with like the immediacy to the controls and everything else. But then they would have to change so much about what their first party titles were to do that.
I mean,
maybe that would be great.
Breath of the Wild isn't a million miles away from a survival game.
True.
With, you know, finite resources, that sort of thing, crafting.
Yeah.
So they could do it. Yeah.
I would like them to broach that thing, but at the same time, the reason that I love, like you said, it's like coming home. The thing that you know that you're getting with Nintendo is that charm, which is so baked in those like Pixarian style experiences that are for everybody. What do you think about the idea of a mature Nintendo in that respect anyway?
I don't know. I mean, I can't say it being something that they'd like to do, and I don't necessarily want them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite happy for them to occupy the space.
Do you want the Witcher walking along with Kirby?
Well, like Reg said, they made their own open world game, and it's better than all the other open world games that came before.
You're not
because
wrong.
Because they actually got it mechanically right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it didn't have the blood, it didn't have the themes, it didn't have all the nasty stuff that was in The Witcher 3, but it's a better game. So,
ooh,
who cares?
Yeah, it probably is, to be honest.
Completely
sort
different.
The best.
I mean,
The Witcher 3 is a great game.
Yeah, I think Breath of the Wild is the best game of the generation.
Breath of the Wild is the best open world game I've ever
played. That's
true.
I mean, they're very different. You can't really compare them.
No,
it's like
better,
comparing an orange with a lemon. They're the same, but they're good for different things.
We can hand this one over to the comment section.
Do we need to see Mario effing and jeffing? And
no, but that would be that whole thing of getting maturity wrong. But it's like they can tackle different themes and then maybe Nintendo.
Well,
they've actually
secretly done it in some of their old games. Majora's Mask mentioned earlier, it's one of the darkest, most introspective games I've ever played.
Okay.
You don't necessarily notice it because it's coated with this Nintendo sheen and it's got the colours.
I think that's what gives it so much appeal.
Yeah.
It's naughty.
It's an existential meditation on the meaning of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And confronting your own mortality. That's pretty deep. You also go around talking to little tree men and things like that. But
it's a giant moon with a face coming in.
Even Link's Awakening, I don't want to ruin it for anyone.
I'm right at the end. Right at the end.
I thought you'd already finished it.
I'm right at the end. Oh. I've never finished it before.
In very vague terms.
Windfish, carry on.
Because I don't want to ruin it for people who are looking forward to the
I know what's going to happen.
Cute remake.
Because I can sense it coming.
But, yeah, it's asking questions about should you always do what you're told?
Right.
Long before Bioshock did. And it's also saying, like, again, a lot of the characters are pondering their own existence.
Right.
I can't really go into
that's cool. Yeah, I mean, yeah. But I think, like you said, those themes are baked into something. Even they can experiment within Zelda for those kind of things. I mean, one of the reasons that I love Princess Zelda in Breath of the Wild, even though it's not necessarily done that well through what we get from the script, is that she's going up against the fact that she's meant to have all these, like, this role put upon her to be this, like, savior of the kingdom. And
see, that's a much more mature theme for me.
Yeah, and it's like, can she awaken her powers and all that kind of stuff?
And coping with it and the anxieties of it rather than just F this and
that. Well, that's the thing, and it's like that would be a way to do mature themes with it through a Nintendo lens.
I think the underlying thing is here though that a lot of people who aren't into Nintendo don't give these games a chance, so you have to play these games, you have to be invested in these games to get these themes, to take away these lessons from these games. Mm-hmm. And people who are judging them by saying, oh, it's just for kids, they're not playing them, so they don't know.
I think that sentiment is dying out.
Superficial judgment.
Yeah, I think that sentiment is like, it's not anywhere near as prevalent as it was across the 2000s. I think when the PS2 was going up against the GameCube, you just saw the side-by-sides and it was so easy to go down the PS2. And I totally did that when I was younger. Because I don't want to play this Mario. But
is this also, I mean, you talk about when you're younger, and I don't want to cast any aspersions on how you operate as a teenager, but... Did you ever feel like there's a certain pressure to conform?
Yeah, totally.
To like standards of manliness.
Well, that's why I brought in the marketing earlier on. Like, I don't think it's a gendered thing, but I think that idea of what's cool, the marketing was so dominative from Sega and then from Sony.
Because bringing up Yoshi again, like I'm playing this going, this is, I wonder if I'd like this if I was Niagara. like it's, I know what you mean. Like you can kind of tell, like you kind of wonder how much of it is sort of like, oh, that is for kids, that is for girls.
Well, I mean, all the Princess Peach stuff, it was like pink colour palettes. And it was, you know, that whole sort of approach to it.
Growing up, I had no pretensions of fitting in with anyone.
Right.
So I just did what I enjoyed and I didn't care.
Yeah, that's one of the greatest strengths you can have across the board.
What difference did it make to me? If someone knew I was playing Nintendo, but I didn't get on with anyone. Mm-hmm.
I think it's just...
Some people thought it was very important.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. If you're going to dissect all that, there's way wider social pressures and everything else. But I think if you bring the marketing side into it, across the 90s, you had Sega just doing really one-on-one, like face-to-face style marketing. Like, we're literally going to call out Mario. We're literally going to show footage and then go, our game is faster.
Yeah.
And then you had like, literally a dude dressed up as Crash Bandicoot shouting about how much better the PlayStation was. So you sort of had all these little things that, you know, literally said to kids, like, this is the cool thing. And if you haven't got this, then, you know, you're in cool. And I think we've moved away from that societally somewhat. But those pressures were way worse back
kids
in the day.
Kids never conform to pressure of Fortnite
skins
these days.
Don't buy the Fortnite skins, children, if anyone's listening. But yeah, I was also towards, because we're almost at the end. We've flown through this Nintendo podcast.
No way.
But I kind of want to just mention, the Switch, because I said before about how it is a hybridization of all the things that they've nailed in the past. But what do you think it is about the Switch that has caught on so well? Because now it's outsold the PS4 in Japan, finally. But now it's like that and the PS4 almost neck and neck, even though the Switch launched, 3 years later.
I think because it is the perfect blend of something like the N64 that is fantastic to use at home, and also the perfect blend of the Game Boy, the DS, something that you can take traveling with you, or you can just go downstairs and sit in the living room with, and just stuff like that. It's the potential to be like, for example, I mainly play it handheld, but I know a lot of people who only play it on their
TV. Mostly docked. On the TV. Well,
there you go. I think because it has that, like you can do either, it has double the strength.
Mm-hmm. So the hardware side absolutely nailed it. What do you think it is about it?
There are a couple of things for me. I'd really like to know the demographics of people Switch owners, like the age ranges. Mm-hmm. So I actually think it's appealing to a maturing audience who aren't really interested in AAA titles anymore. Those are the sort of stuff they played when they were younger, when they were teenagers.
The Switch is like an indie powerhouse.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's also people who grew up loving Nintendo and they just want to play some real games, but they also don't want to commit themselves massively to them. They don't define themselves as gamers. Mm-hmm. And it really seems to have targeted that market very well in its advertising.
Yep.
It's not like saying, this is the most powerful thing ever. Look at these graphics. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is a game you can have fun with your friends. Mm-hmm. This is a game you can sit on the rooftop. around
trendy
your barbecue.
Rooftop
all those
parties.
Rooftop parties we've been to. I mean, that was the one thing that Nintendo have always nailed in their marketing across the Wii, Wii U, and now is that idea of everyone playing together, like multiple age groups, multiple everything.
The other thing as well I was going to mention is, you look at the highest selling console of all time, and behind the PS2, very, very close, is the DS.
Right.
So that tells you, people love handhelds.
That's the one console I didn't get.
Yeah, the love. That console had huge social appeal, and Nintendo have effectively baked the two parts of a business into one here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So for a lot of people also, it's a natural successor to a DS.
Yeah, I think speaking of like natural successors and stuff, like for me, one of the biggest reasons the Switch has taken off is I think the average person, the layman, whatever the hell you want to call them, I don't think that the average consumer realized that the Wii U was the Wii's sequel. I think this is a market responding to the idea of, oh, the next Nintendo console is finally here, and it's been 7 years or 8 years since the first Wii. I think that's where the mums and the grandmas and the sort of like buying something for little Jimmy comes flying in. That would be the thing that I think elevates the Switch so much.
Just something else is just something so fun about the Switch.
Yeah.
You look at the adverts for little noise, and you look at colours, and you look at it and you think, you know what? I just want to play that.
Yeah.
That to me is a game.
Oh, yeah, the design is incredible.
Yeah, you know, thinking, I don't want to get bogged down in hardware and installing things and worrying about how much room I've got on that drive.
That's self-awareness.
Online and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's self-awareness to have sound effects, to have the little click like action in the middle of their live streams and things like that. Those would be associated more with the old school when everyone had like a sound effect like fatality or a coin noise or a ring noise or whatever. Like those things, I did a whole list of the most iconic video game moves and noises and signature effects.
Follow what all culture?
What culture gaming? All those things though feel like they've kind of gone by the wayside with this sort of like nebulous approach to maturity. It's like, well, we don't do that anymore because, you know, we're over here doing The Last of Us and The Witcher and whatever. And it's like, that's fine, those games have identifiable elements, but the Switch, if you just literally just played the Switch click sound effect, you know exactly what it is.
I love it.
Yeah, and you already have things that you associate with it, whether it's, you know, Zelda,
me,
Mario,
it
or whatever.
The Game Boy startup noise.
Right, right.
Exactly.
Oh,
and that's another console that appealed in a huge like capacity to every strata of society.
Right.
Almost on the same level of Switch. That wasn't for kids at all. That was true. Businessmen, that was adults, that was people who wanted a console that could just play in 5 minutes and just have something a little bit fun to take away from regular life.
Which, I mean, like you're wider in the gaming industry today. There's like all this sort of talk of like found time. Like, you know, you have found time when you're like on you're traveling somewhere or you're like waiting for something to happen, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are the times where
time is huge. I don't play AAA games, not because I find them so incredibly dull, although that is one of the big reasons. But because I just don't have the
you
time.
Liked Breath of the Wild.
I love Breath of the Wild.
There you go.
Yeah, I found time for that. No, but simply because a lot of them ask, the expectations are far too high.
Right.
And the Switch gives you opportunity to actually play games
in
between your real life.
Mm-hmm. I was also going to say that accessibility thing. It's like, I think a lot of the industry is trying to find a way to inject games into your periphery as much as possible.
To maybe recognize that not everybody's a hardcore gamer.
Yeah. Or like, or they can pick and choose when they want to actually knuckle down and put the time in. We can end on, what are we looking forward to? Are we looking forward to a particular game? Are we looking forward to new Switch models? What do we want to see? Go on, Rach.
Pokemon. I'm pretty excited for the new Pokemon. Mm-hmm. It's going to be open world, which is like...
So many Breath of the Wild vibes. I swear there was a sound cue in the trailer for the E3 thing.
It's the
It's literally straight out of Breath of the Wild. And I'm like, you guys are connoting Breath of the Wild.
And there's
exactly
like grass blowing in the wind, and there's Pokemon like in the grass. Oh, just, it's everything that 9-year-old me wanted in a
Dynamax
video game.
Every single
and
thing.
Finally, 20 years later, I'm getting it.
I think, I mean, even when, I mean, obviously, Reggie's been replaced by Doug Bowser now, but like Reggie used to always talk about that. And when they announced Labo, it was like, oh, it's something for kids and something for the people that have the children within them, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that is the core of Nintendo. Like, it's that ageless, immortal appeal.
Yeah.
Benji, what's your predictions and looking forward to
things?
They
blew me away at E3, I have to say.
Oh, it was 40, I referred to it as before, 42 minutes of perfection. Absolute brilliance.
Brilliant. Even the sort of awkward interactions between Bowser
I love that stuff.
For me, I'm surprised you didn't mention Animal Island, Rich.
Animal Island? Yeah. Wait, Animal Crossing?
Get it right.
It does look lovely. It's something that I've got a lot of negative feelings towards Animal Crossing, actually, because I remember I had it on my DS and I used to babysit my wee cousin, and I used to like bring my DS because I have to always be doing something, me. And she used to like be like, oh, can I play your Animal Crossing? I'd be like, iPal. And she'd be like, go in, sell all of my stuff to Tom Nook. All my hard-earned furniture.
Don't give everything to Tom Nook.
Wild World was it called on the DS? On New Leaf or whatever.
New Leaf is the newer 2013 one.
Wild World was on the Wii, I think.
Whichever one was on the DS.
Right.
But because I was at uni at the time and I was going to bed about 5 a.m. every morning.
You could only play at nighttime and nobody was awake.
No one was awake.
I love that stuff though.
Boring. I just walked around like a... I don't know.
Trying to get some fish in at 3 in the morning.
No, the new one looks very good, purely because this is a game that I feel like would benefit. I've always thought this would benefit from being online, and it's finally going online, so that is very exciting.
Survival elements.
I was going to say, the most survival, like, I like the pole vault over the river, like exploring
a
bit more.
Of camping is not fun at all. But I like the idea of...
It is the natural progression for that game, and I'm really excited. Mm-hmm.
Is your big pick Animal Crossing, then?
No. I'm really looking forward to Luigi's Scary House 3.
Oh, really?
Spooky Hoose!
Yeah, and Link and the Giant Egg.
Good.
Remake, that's going to be... I mean, that's about
on the Amiibo for that more than the game, I think, but it still looks lovely.
Link's Awakening is my favourite game of all time. Mm-hmm. Except for days when it's Monkey Island 2.
It's going to be so
the remake looks spot on.
It looks so adorable. I mean, obviously, I've played it to death already, but I don't mind playing it some more. And the big one for everybody is Breath of the Wild 2.
Yes.
I mean, I would have taken
Breath of the Wild 2. I mean, yeah, I think it'll be a while away. Mine's just Metroid Prime, Metroid Prime 4, because I need that Metroid Prime framework with proper... I want to play that handheld, because I love the style. I actually really like Other M. I know it's like everyone shats on it, but I love the idea that they had the idea that you could take the Wiimote, turn it sideways, and pretend that it's a mini NES controller, play it like old-school side-scrolling Metroid, and then when you come up to stuff... No, wait a minute, Benjamin. And then every time you come up to stuff, you would flick the remote and just shoot dudes. Proper first-person style.
That's cool.
That is cool, and I know that's not going to be in Prime. I don't think it is anyway. But
team,
I love that stuff.
A Team Ninja game, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Really interesting. But I didn't actually like Samus interacting with human beings and talking. And
oh, really?
That Metroid's about isolation.
Yeah. When she first got a voice, it was a bit weird, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Actually, in this moment, I'll totally recommend. I think it's called Samus Returns. It's the remake of Metroid 2 that's on the 3DS.
That's good, but it's possibly a little hold your hand a little bit too much.
Yeah.
I think Super Metroid is a perfect game.
Yes.
I actually don't. I think it is flawless. It's like,
me and Benji, we tend to deviate on this. I don't know where you stand, Rach, in terms of Metroidvanias that tell you where to go. In terms of here's the dot, so you need to get to here eventually.
But Super Metroid does tell you.
Yeah, not all the time.
It so directly.
It's got a map.
Yeah, there is a little thing.
That's the whole point. You're alone and you need to use your resources to get around.
Anyway.
The map could be a bit better. But
yeah.
It's 99.
I mean, I'm very much on, like, I prefer Ori to Hollow Knight kind of Metroidvania.
I agree with that as well.
Mm, we can do a whole separate podcast on Metroidvanias. But yeah, my whole thing is Metroid Prime. I wanted to get like a little teaser. I want to see what Retro Studios have came up with, being that they had to restart development and kind of go back into it, knowing that it's more fan-focused and whatever
it is now.
Same
thing happened on the original Metroid Prime.
Mm.
Nintendo went to Texas and told Retro Studios, like, the game, right? Rollicking. Said, this ain't good enough.
Yeah, well,
they ended up producing one of the best games of its generation.
That is how many companies do that, though. Look at companies who just like ship it out the door, just like, fine, it's done, let's make some money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many companies do that these days? Nintendo
Nintendo have never done that.
Was it the Immortal?
No, I mean, like, I mean,
that's, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, like, just restarting Metroid 4.
Their philosophy is it's ready when it's ready.
Mm-hmm. Which is the Immortal Miyamoto quote of, like, you know, you'll take your time, it'll be good, it'll be worthwhile eventually.
Yes.
Which, like, to bring it all full circle, I think that even though they obviously hit their strides 20 years ago, we're back in the middle of something that they've bowed their time for, and you look at the Switch and it is everything
combined.
I think
it's relevant to the industry today, so we're in 1995,
yeah,
if not more so.
Which is so lush.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The beacon everyone should look towards.
Hell yeah. Cool. Well, you guys, let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're watching on the video side, or if you're on the audio platforms, come find us on social media. For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Benjamin Richardson.
Goodbye.
And Rachel Shackleton.
Flip and love, Nintendo.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.